There's a film in that. There's a film in that. There's a film in that. There's a film in that.
There's a film in that. There's a film in that.
Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of There's a Film in That.
Curs!
The podcast where three friends attempt to write a screenplay. Joining me as always are Ryan.
Hi.
And Tiernan.
Good evening.
Hey, guys.
How are we all?
Very well.
Bangarang.
Back in the studio. Episode 8.
Still going, this podcast.
I know, incredible.
We are committed.
By my account, this is 4 months now, then.
Quarter of our year spent in a...
Third of our year. Oh,
maths. No.
Welcome to the maths podcast, where we discuss fractions of varying years. Levels.
Okay. What's your favourite fraction?
Ooh. Eighth. 7/8.
You two are destined to be one.
By one. By an eighth. I love an eighth. Can I just, before we carry on, it's come to my attention over eating dinner today that Ashley actually looks like Detective Hopper from Stranger Things.
You know, it's on my watch list. Haven't watched it yet.
Well, you don't have to. You know the guy in it, the detective guy. What's his name?
Yeah.
He's in Revolutionary Road.
Yeah. He does actually,
you
doesn't
do.
He?
I can feel an Instagram picture coming up soon.
Actually, you know what I noticed this week, though? Because as I mentioned to you guys leading into this podcast, over the past week, I've watched all of Peaky Blinders, which I hadn't seen before, because season 4 is starting this week in the UK on BBC Two. So
can you do
to
a Birmingham
up.
Accent now? Black country accent?
Peaky fucking Blinders.
No, I'm really sorry, everyone from Birmingham.
It wasn't my best.
It was a Peaky Blinders on that, isn't it?
Oh, that's way better.
Yeah, that was a lot better.
Peaky fucking Blinders? No.
Who did I?
That's pretty good. Nice. We'll get you. Oh, we should. The season 5 has been commissioned, so we can get you on there.
My mate Nige, he's an actor as well. He's a Brummy.
Ah.
And so I always think of his accent.
It was a show for a long time that I never thought I'd like, but I was just blown away by it. And so, but to get back to my original point, Littlefinger, Aidan Gillen, is going to be in season 4. There's a little shot of him in the teaser for season 4, and he seemed to have longer hair on it. So I think I no longer look like him. So much so that I didn't recognise him in that teaser.
I reckon there's a chance you'll look like him, but with short hair.
Yeah.
No, but he looks different enough that I don't think it applies anymore.
The truth will always catch you up, Tiernan.
Do that in a Birmingham accent.
Truth will always... No, that's...
in Liverpool.
That one all of a Liverpool.
By order of the Peaky fucking blind at now.
You do this Manchester thing, don't you?
I live somewhere between Birmingham and Manchester. Don't know, my geography well enough to. That's pretty good again. Yeah, all right, anyway, moving on.
Peaky Blinders, is that your recommendation?
Oh, we can't do recommendations.
I know, because
we should discuss our previous recommendations before we discuss new recommendations.
Also, everyone's heard of Peaky Blinders. It's like recommending the sun to get a tan.
Yeah, but do you know what? I was surprised, though, because a lot of people I've spoken to in this week have not watched it. Everyone knows of it without watching it. As the same as myself for many years. Because I was just saying, I never thought I'd like it. It's not my kind of genre and my... I don't like the historical stuff always so much, but I've been blown away by it. Cillian Murphy, incredible. Like, always
love him.
He was good, but my God. Absolutely carries that thing on his shoulders.
We were.
Paul Anderson, one of my favourite actors ever, who plays Arthur. So I've enjoyed it immensely.
Great. And it's got Helen McCrory, isn't it? She's great.
So good.
Yeah.
Sam Neill. Great.
Sam Neill.
Well, this, I think, brings us on to what we're going to be talking about today.
It does.
The announcement
nicely.
Of our Peaky Blinders podcast.
Welcome to...
Leftover Peaky Blinders.
So, but we should discuss previous recommendations first, though, shouldn't we?
We're in the corner. Hey, oh my God, there goes a recommendation. Let's grab it.
Recommendations have now taken on physical form in our jingles. They can be grabbed out of thin air.
Yeah.
Which is pretty apt for the way we've been doing it so far. But so
maybe we can just fast track this. Did anyone watch any of the recommendations?
Well, I cleverly recommended things I had watched the week before, American Vandal and Mindhunters, which I think actually weirdly American Vandal being a mockumentary, but was cast really, really well, especially the lead character of the high schooler who gets expelled. Couldn't be more perfect kind of jock, stoner, idiot as such. He's absolutely brilliant in it.
They're going to do a number two, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So really? They've announced.
I don't know, I've not seen all of it yet, so...
I think they released an image or some sort of teaser, and it kind of suggested there's a completely new suit and a completely new scandal, but maybe the same fake documentary team behind it. So, could be interesting. I'd be intrigued to see what they do. Because I never thought the first concept of a high schooler being expelled for drawing dicks on teacher's car was carry for 8 episodes. Yeah. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt now after being blown away by that. But it was fantastic casting. Also, Mindhunters. The guy who plays Ed in Mindhunters, the first serial killer they interview. My God, he was incredible.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Big guy.
Yeah, yeah. Just absolutely scene steals it, you know? So there was some good, they're tying nicely to what we're going to do.
Does anyone else, because I've not seen a lot purely because I promised my wife that we would watch together.
My wife.
But every time I've seen bits of it, the guy that's in Fight Club is one of the detectives. He's one of the detectives. He's a detective. He's the guy in Fight Club that just goes, his name is Robert Paulson. And every time I see it, and anything he's been in outside of Fight Club, all I can hear when he talks is, his name is Robert Paulson. His name is Robert Paulson. I just think of Meatloaf.
I was going to say, yeah.
But yeah, I'm still very excited about it.
When you're not thinking of Meatloaf anyway.
That's often.
It's always in the back of our minds.
Yeah. So long ago and it was far away and it was so much better than it ever been. A little bit of Meatloaf.
Our guest in the studio, Meatloaf.
Rode up on my Harley.
Ash, did you have a recommendation?
I'm not sure whether I recommended anything. Did I?
No, you know what? You didn't. You went, no, I'm not going to recommend it.
But I did watch. I watched James Lewis's recommendation of Rushmore, the excellent first film.
Ah, yes. Yeah, yeah. Very good film.
It was really good. I really enjoyed it.
There's some story about Bill Murray. Like, he basically took, for Wes Anderson, took a massive, massive, massive pay cut because he wanted to be something like, it was something he wanted to do in it. He wanted to be in it. But basically, like, he did that because he was really like the project, which he got to love Bill Murray, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Forgive me if we've discussed this before, but Bill Murray, famous for not owning a cell phone and not being on email either, I believe, is the rumours that he, you just have to go through his agent and it's somehow scripts get to him or handed to him, you know. People have run into him and given him stuff that he's read and got back to them.
Oh, wow.
He's famous for that. Supposedly Christopher Nolan as well doesn't have a phone off when he's not working. It's very tough to get in touch with him when he's not working.
All he has to do is, like, if Hans Zimmer wants to get hold of Nolan, he just plays, like, an E minor.
All right, yeah.
And just goes, that's it. And he turns up. It's like Batman.
It's like that note.
Sound Batman.
Isn't there a sound where there's a particular note, high-pitched note, will make people shit themselves?
A low-pitch, like yeah.
Low-pitch, yeah.
Oh, it's low-pitch.
The brown note,
yeah. So, and Bill Murray is supposed to be famous as well for, like, rugby tackling and doing weird things to people and then they're going to, and just whispering, no one's going to believe this and walking off. Yeah. But that he does weird things to people if you're like.
He's probably going to have to rein it in a little bit now, don't he?
If it turns out we can't talk about Bill Murray by the time this podcast comes out.
I know, I have faith in Bill Murray. Yeah. I have faith in Bill Murray. So and then on top of that, we also have Goonies from Ryan.
Yeah.
Which I didn't watch.
No, but I feel like I know it well enough.
I think I watched the second season of Stranger Things and it kind of felt like I wanted just to watch the Goonies at the end. So I watched a few films with like actors from the Goonies in it because I think like Lou and I watched Stand By Me the other day. She'd never seen it, which is obviously a wonderful film to watch. And Corey Feldman.
I've never seen it. Never seen that film.
Oh, my days.
No.
Oh, my days.
Yeah, no, you should watch it. It's really great, isn't it?
Yeah, great film.
But yeah,
River Phoenix.
I watched River Phoenix and Sean Astin and Donald. What's his name? Someone Donald from Sliders.
All right.
And what's his name? Jaws. The guy from Jaws.
All right.
Richard
the Shark.
The Shark.
I'm not going to stand by you.
You could do the whole
just in shorts and a t-shirt looking around conspicuously.
Smoking cigarettes, angry at his parents.
Trying to fit in, yeah. I would watch that film.
Stand by me with the shark.
Shark by me. The follow-up to classic. The smash hit. But yeah, so speaking of sharks out of place.
Fish out of water.
Fish out of the air. What a segue. Yeah? No?
Yeah.
Let's talk casting.
What's casting, Tiernan?
Well, casting is picking the people to be in your movie.
All right.
Done.
See you guys.
So Ryan has left the building. Now, yeah, casting, obviously, I'm sure most people know the idea of picking the people you want to be in your movie, actors to convey the roles you or someone else has written in the film you're making. So quite late in the process. Obviously, we're still writing, so it'd be too early to do it for our project as of yet. But as people come together in your script, you could start to form an idea of the characters and what you'd like to put out there.
Yeah, I mean, there are films which are cast with actors without the script already be written. There's a famous one with Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe, wasn't he? I think he had like 20 pages of script. And then from the understanding, Michael Mann had a chat with Ridley about who would get for Gladiator and that. I don't know, and his name came up, and then they were back and forth all night about it. So, but I mean, it's a little bit different because that's been approached independently by a director. But
no, what's interesting, there is a few different ways to do it. Because speaking of Ridley Scott, I heard an interesting anecdote the other day that supposedly, I think Aliens may have been written with gender-neutral names, so they could cast. Obviously, most scripts are very obviously who's male and who's female. But I suppose the Aliens written with gender-neutral names, one of the early drafts, I believe, so they could cast the person who was best for the role. Hence, Sigourney Weaver ended up getting it.
Oh, right.
So they left it completely open, and that's how that came about. I heard, I don't know the truth in that, but that was someone telling me that the other day. And then, yeah, other directors, I think Mike Lee, again, we might have discussed him before, but he, there's other directors do the same, who write scripts based off improvisations. Mm-hmm. So they hire actors, give them the outline of a story, do all the rehearsals and record all of them, and then write the script based off the improvisation, and then get those same actors often back in to film it.
Mm. What do they rehearse?
So they're given the scenarios. So they'd have like a treatment, something we've discussed before on this podcast, episode 2, for those of you who haven't checked out, our least popular episode. Way to drive the ratings up.
Everyone is number 2.
So, but I think they have the vague outline of their story, but they don't have all the dialogue and everything else. So they will put actors in a room that they've cast on the outlines of their characters in their head or on paper, and then they get them scenarios and get them to improvise all the lines, record it all, and write the scripts off based off the improvisations.
Well, very cool.
So there is different ways to do it, but the standard way, obviously, being you have written a script, it has been completed. If you're going, like, if it's a bigger project, you'd have, you know, maybe a production company behind it. And then the idea is you start to cast it. You can get names attached. So
imagine I've got my screenplay.
Yep.
What would I do?
Well,
congratulate myself.
Yeah.
You make a cup of tea.
Pat yourself on the back.
Yes.
And then if depending on the budget, so let's assume that we're not on like a gigantic blockbuster budget on a fairly low budget, you would approach a casting director with your script and ask them very nicely to find actors for you.
Or presumably, could you even just try and find them yourself?
You can,
yeah. I guess a lot of short films, new filmmakers, something I did in film school and straight after and everything else, is that you have to find them yourself. I can't afford to have someone help you. But thankfully, there's lots of places out there that means you can do it yourself. The main ones in the UK certainly are Spotlight and Casting Call, which are actors' kind of databases, and you can throw your project up there or break it down so you have all the characters and what you're looking for, little descriptions, age ranges, etc., etc. And then actors can apply for the parts. And
it is actually now called Mandy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, there was always a Mandy website which you could go on to, which was free, but I think it's like the Blue Compass Group, wherever they are. They essentially just amalgamated it, so it's Mandy. Casting Call Pro is now called Mandy.
Ah, but is Spotlight still the big UK one?
So Spotlight's the one that if as an actor you would, in order to, it's almost like, not necessarily to be fully fledged actor to have it, but in order to be taken seriously, there are certain things that you need outside of just your craft, and one of them is
for better or for worse, is a Spotlight membership, because it has all of the information that a casting director or a director will need to understand who you are and what you can do and what you're capable of and what your strengths are and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And what you look like.
Fencing.
Fencing, yeah, total, yeah.
Every actor in the
fencing
UK.
And riding a horse.
Yeah. Badminton.
Neither of which are on my spot.
It's like a CV in a way, isn't it?
Essentially, it's a CV.
You have a picture and all the basic height and weight requirements and everything else like that, and age range, et cetera, everything you need to know physically. List of credits, theatre, film, television, short films, everything an actor has done. And then, yeah, special skills.
Special skills, yeah.
Fencing.
I think it's interesting because you can't say, and by law, you shouldn't have to say your age. Like, you can have a range on there, which is important. You don't have to do that.
Yeah, I love that. Well, because it normally has a picture as well, though, yeah?
I think, obviously,
it's part of the job to have a physical appearance out there in terms of, like, pictures or showreel clips and a video CV as such.
Yeah.
So occasionally you do come across the written playing age doesn't quite translate the visual of that thing.
And it's funny because you could get that your agent goes, yeah, Ryan can totally do that. Ryan, you could play a 20-year-old college student. You're like, all right. And you get to the casting and you're like, yeah, this is, I'm here. This is wrong. You know?
Well, yeah. I had a good one when, with my graduation film, I had a character with from the Middle East. I got a load of English white actors saying, I'm just back from holidays, got a really good tan, and I'm ready to go.
Classic.
So, because it's, and I don't mean that taking the piss, I guess. It's just everyone's keen to get work and everything, but it is. Certainly from the other side of the camera, you've got to find a way to whittle it down, and tans don't normally do it.
I had a few questions, actually. So you, just from, I guess, from an actor's perspective, if you're looking at appearance and experience, what would you, do you have like a set number that you go, right, I've just got to cut this off? You know, I've looked at Spotlight, I've looked at Mandy, and I've got, you know, four roles to cast, and I've got 400 people on this. Is there a point when you go, right, I've seen, what is there anything else? I mean, let's talk about appearances. Is there anything that you'd see that you would go, yeah, for them and no for someone else?
Well, I guess it would just depend on the role, but it's just so tough because you're looking, I sound like I'm being really apologetic here, but again, I'm not looking for sympathy as a director, but yeah, you've got to, like say, got it down to one person somehow.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when you get such an amount of applications, it's purely, you have a character in your head often if you've written it yourself, or whether you're a director who didn't write the script, you're still formed an idea of that character
yeah.
and what you're looking for. So, and it sounds really harsh, but yeah, you're just trying to work it down somehow. So I'm taking in everyone's, I go through every application, but there's some people who instantly are like, no, I don't see them in the role. So I've just got to cut them somehow. And then experience, again, it sounds harsh, but if you're doing, as you go on in your career, there's enough stress on set that occasionally you don't want the added stress of it being someone's first film, for instance.
Right.
You get people who maybe only done theatre or only done shorts, and this would be their first feature and everything. And, you know, there's different times in your career where you're like, I don't want the stress of coaching someone in this role or having to, you know, that I've got enough going on myself.
Sure.
Obviously, there's exceptions to that. If someone was to really blow me away with a showreel or something like that, then I'd always be open to that. But in general, that's sadly one of the ways you have to cut things down.
So if that's one way, if is there anything that you would say from a director's or a casting perspective that is a no-no for an actor? If you're looking at a CV and, yeah, we've got the obvious horse riding and fencing and things, but is there anything that you would go, this
complete turn off type?
Yeah, turn. Yeah,
I was like, how important is having a good headshot?
You exactly, yeah, to? or even having a showreel, for example.
Yeah, no, a showreel definitely. I'd be suspicious if I couldn't watch a person's work. If I looked them up and it was just pictures of various things and no actual recordings of their acting, and we start to be suspicious of that. I had that reason actually with the project, and I just couldn't find any work from this actor. There's nothing online, no showreel, no clips or whatever, and I was just like, okay, this is strange. Because obviously in the social media world that we live in, like, you'd expect there to be something.
Yeah.
And I've gone so far as there was once early in my career, I was working with someone else and I agreed to help them with something, and they brought this actor in. But what we discovered later is he'd done a photo shoot like to make it look like he was a celebrity. Like he'd hired various like fake paparazzi and had pictures of him coming out of his house and everything, and he created this kind of mini celebrity online persona, and that he was using to kind of trick people.
Genius.
And it, like, yeah, and I found like a fake pictures of him like outside a mansion and all this kind of stuff, and like all this fake backstory as to who he was. So great character.
The thing is, there is a film that, but you think all that time and imagination that person has spent doing that, he could have put all he spent. All of that energy avoiding the one thing that he really wants to do. That blows my mind. Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't want to work.
Yeah. Want to skip the front of the queue.
Yeah. I want to do that. So yeah, it's genius, but it's definitely, it's damaging to them. It's also just fucking lazy.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
All right.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Episode 8. What? When the podcast.
Look at Ash's Instagram picture of him walking out of a mansion.
Picture of me fencing.
Yeah, riding a horse.
Or putting up a fence.
But no, so yeah, that would be a big no. You have to be able to see. And yeah. I hope any actors listening, I'm not offending by saying, but obviously we'll chat maybe later about big budget stuff and the idea of casting the director who would maybe watch every show. And if you get 500 applications, they all have a 5 to 10 minute show reel. Ooh. I just don't have like the time to watch, you know, you don't have 2 days often on a high, like, you know, quick turnaround short film to watch 3 days of footage of actors, you know.
What is your time frame on a show reel?
So ideally, a show, so everyone listening, a show reel, actors have them and directors and filmmakers have them, DOPs and different people, but it's effectively a video CV, and it would be made up of various clips from short films and, you know, feature films or commercials and everything else. Same for directors and montage, their favourite shots, followed by, like, little clips from their films. So, I mean, 3 to 5 minutes. And I would always say, well, for anyone, you're front loading that because again, you're just looking for ways to kind of not cast a person. It's so tough. So if they haven't grabbed me in the first 90 seconds, it's like anything, I'm probably going to flick off. So you'd front load. Oh God, you can't say anything in this current climate. So you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm going to stop the video
and flick off.
But you know, so you'd front load that to try and make sure that you're all your best clips there and you engage someone.
Yeah.
But from that, get down to maybe 50, let's say, where I'd watch their show reel. And from that, I'm hopefully maybe getting, you know, 10 to 20 to audition. Again, sometimes that's less, sometimes that more. But that process doesn't always work out. And then you do auditions maybe and you go back to square one and say, I didn't find the person I'm looking for, but a second call out, or you go back to that 450 you've gone through and double check that there's no one else you want to get in.
There's always
so tough.
And, you know, there's always the 1 in a million chance that a director who does it, he's done it a couple of times, like Luc Besson, for example, you should be walking in a supermarket and he goes, yeah, like, look at you.
Yeah, yeah. No, that does occasionally happen, doesn't it?
I mean, it's...
Or you look like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they do that idea of open auditions where anyone can go for a role.
Which is
Daniel Radcliffe, I believe that's how he got. He wasn't obviously a trained actor to begin with, but he fit the bill in terms of the character. And so that's how his career started. I believe that's the story anyway.
Mm. Or Bob in Twin Peaks, right?
Bob in Twin Peaks. Wasn't he like...
He's a camera operator.
Something like that, yeah.
And wasn't Harrison Ford a carpenter?
Yeah, that doesn't... No, but he was a carpenter, but he'd carpenter. But he'd already done the beginning part, I think, of Apocalypse Now. And before even that, he'd done Force 10 to Navarone. And he was like one of the lead roles. So he'd done that. Then he kind of half gave it up. And then he was working on... You know, I think he was working on something. And then, So he was a carpenter, but he'd already done like...
Okay.
At least two roles.
Fair enough. So. Yeah, so that's how you'd get it down to those who you want to audition, and then you get to do the fun part of auditioning.
Okay, but before we dive into the fun part of auditioning, if I had a bigger budget, then how would I? Would it be a similar process? Or you mentioned a casting director?
Yeah, it's kind of similar. You get if it's a bigger budget, they're doing The Hobbit again, or they're doing Lord of the Rings, or something like that. You know, there's quite a few big roles. They still approach a casting director. So one of the most famous casting directors in the UK is Nina Gold, who does like Game of Thrones and plethora of British TV and international films. And they would approach Nina, and Nina would go to, or her company would go to. She does herself. Eh? Yeah. I used to live right close to her. Actually,
I love the idea that she's like one woman. She like does the whole like. Hello,
Nina.
I'll put you through to Nina.
Hello, I'm Nina. Yeah, she would. I think her company would then approach different agents that they recognise and they have a relationship, a business relationship with, and that stems from, for example, the actors being reliable and talented and just
back catalogue of work.
Yeah, great back catalogue of work, and there has to be a good know good rapport with that company. It's like anything. And then the casting director would then speak to the agents. The agents would then go, yeah, I've got a few people in mind that I'd put them forward. Or if you had a wish list, they would, if the big production, it was a big production, they had a wish list of people they wanted, then they would ask for certain people. There is like this, you know, you hear it all the time. If let's say one agent represents Hugh Jackman, And you're doing a film and you want they want to get Hugh Jackman in the role, and he still needs to be cast and everything like that. He may do it. He may read for it, but they also strike up deals. So if you want Hugh Jackman, then you have to take someone else as well for another role. So that sometimes comes into it, but they still go to their ones that they see as reliable and have a good relationship with. And then once if they've still not got it, let's say the role still has been cast and it's not quite right and it's not the right tone they want for the film and with the actor, then it then goes out to the next kind of round of agents, I guess, and other people. And then if they still haven't got it, it then goes down the line to another smaller set of agents and keeps going until it hits a point when it will then go to Spotlight. And then, or another cast, and it opens up to everyone else, and then they see them, and then it goes down to the smaller casting things, and then it's, you know, might as well just put it in the yellow pages or something.
It's the idea, I guess, that they don't necessarily audition as such. When you're big enough, you stop auditioning as an actor, becomes. You can still obviously do, but a lot of times it's more meetings.
Yeah,
Tarantino, for instance, knows who he wants to approach maybe for a role, and they meet, and it's more about he's seen that actors effectively audition 100 times from all the films they've been in and their fan base and their body of work. So it's just the idea that they meet and they can have that discussion about the role in more detail. Are they going to work well together as a pair, and what that actor thought about the role and what they'd bring to it, and vice versa. It becomes more like just a high level meeting where they decide whether they want it suitable and whether they want to work together, as opposed to they get sent the script and have to come in to read lines or anything else like that.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So that's big time.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
That's where we are, yeah. That's what we'll be doing.
That's what I imagine. Phew. This is what I imagine our film will be, the Hosepipe Extravaganza.
Yeah.
That's what we'll be doing, purely meetings. I imagine as soon as this podcast finishes, our life just becomes meetings, casting meetings.
Yeah, it's all day non-stop.
Yeah. I don't even know my name.
So let's assume a more traditional situation in which you're the director, you're a budding director, and you've got 10 or 20 actors that are vying for the role, and they're all together in one place. How would that usually go down?
So you'd book a space to run your auditions. Ideally not your bedroom or your house. Try and get some sort of
I've had one of them before.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Grim.
Yeah. I'll tell you another story in a minute.
God, this is worrying.
Do you want to hear it now?
Turn off the microphone.
Well, this was maybe it harks back to talking about Skype and self-tapes and stuff, but and I'm pretty sure this wasn't just me this happened to. So about probably 2 years ago, I got a message pop up on my, which was then Casting Call Pro, which is now Mandy, and it said BBC Casting is seeing you. No, 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 they want to, they're casting this role and they'd love to see you. They'd love to have a Skype meeting with you. And I was a little bit hesitant at the time. So I had a quick look on a couple of forums, acting forums, about this, and there was a few things saying, I've just had this as well. You just go, you know, there's no one knew anything about it. So
your face is intriguing me here.
So I was like, okay, you know, in for a penny, let's see what this is all about. So I log on to Skype, and I get on Skype, and it's a couple naked just on the Skype thing, and it was like they wanted to do some kind of like sex Skype thing. I was like, yep, I'm out. See you later. Just hung up in that lot, and it was a whole scam. It was like a scam to get an actor to, I don't know,
what,
sleep with him or something. It was mental. I think it got a lot of attention. Straight after that, you saw people going, "Do not open this.
Yeah.
Don't go on this password on this Skype thing." But it was like, what? It was the middle of the day. I think I was in Portsmouth. I think I was like seeing family.
It was the middle of the day. That was what was wrong with it.
Why is this audition at 2 a.m.?
It was after seven.
I get all my auditions at twilight. It was like a Sunday, which is...
Oh, God, everything's wrong with this.
There is.
Sunday, middle of the day.
You expect the odd castings and stuff to come through on a Sunday, and you do, weirdly enough, you usually get emails that start around the early hours of Monday morning for castings, and that's normally a short film or a student film. You see them ones, or someone that's pulled out, so, you know, quick, get them on. But that was a weird one. I had my laptop out. I was with my family in Portsmouth.
Thank God you said laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, did I? And then I opened. I was like, yeah, that's can I close that down? So yeah, and then it became a thing.
I won't say experiences. Let's say my understanding of the internet is though, if you are a naked couple looking for people to. Like that seems like an awful lot of trouble for that to create a whole fake cut. Like, there's enough naked people on the internet that you could find other people without creating a fake casting and contracting.
It was
Ryan
such,
Mercy.
Yeah. It wasn't just me. I was gutty when I saw that. It wasn't just me. It's like, no, it was a weird thing. I've had other weird castings. I could spend probably a whole hour telling you about weird castings I've had, but none of them.
That's going to be our supplementary episode this week.
Ryan's weird casting. But no, I don't think any, obviously what's going on at the moment in the current climate of film and filmmaking.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I don't think I've ever had to have anything like that. But definitely I've had some castings where...
I've been licked in a casting.
Have you?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was we'll chat about auditions in a minute, but I was reading for a friend of mine at film school. So I was reading the lines with the actors, and it was a seduction scene. So one actress went fully into it and came over, straddled me whilst doing this seduction scene, and then stuck her tongue in my ear. So that was quite... She's got the role. No. No, it was...
Well, for you had an ear infection.
Yeah. I'm deaf in that ear.
So clearly.
That was quite a weird one. To say the least, that was probably my weirdest. I've had actors come in to auditions in character.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Do you know what? Because actually, the first time it happened to me, I ended up casting the guy. It was my very first short film, and like it was my first time running auditions. I was super nervous because it's like, yeah, such a new thing. And you say it's I guess like a job interview, and no one prepares you for that when you're just like in college and stuff. They tell you how to run auditions, but no one prepares you that kind of. Like power and like responsibility, you have to run it properly. So this actor came in, and I said I'd had about 7 or 8. I was quite comfortable at that point, knowing how to do it. We can chat about that in a minute, I guess, how we'd run them normally. But he came in characters. It was a mockumentary about a man who was addicted to photobombing, and he came in playing this addict. And I was trying to do the official, like, how are you and everything. And he was answering me. And he's like, and I think he could see I was a bit caught off guard. So he said, do you mind? I really enjoyed the script. And I was just going to go and I thought I'd do this in character. So I was like, okay. And we just had such fun. And he read the lines. It was and obviously it was a mockumentary. And comedy is obviously an interesting thing for casting that I enjoyed it so much. And he had me laughing so much. And I enjoyed his personality. And we're still really good friends to this day. But that's how, he just caught me off guard in that, and I really enjoyed it, so I've been really open to it since.
Ooh.
I had another casting where actually I've cast, it was for a really charming con man type character, and this actor came in, and he just was so friendly and so funny and quick-witted and everything. I was like, this is everything this character's got to be. So by the time he read the lines, I already cast him as such, because I knew this guy was this character. Thankfully, he was a really good actor as well, and he read the lines and took direction well and everything, but it was actually by that point I was already like, this is the character who was on the page.
So what would you do if you were cast something and you said, Ryan, do you want to come in audition, and I came in character? How would you take that?
Knowing you or not knowing you?
Knowing me.
Knowing you. Yeah, I'd be open to that. Would I'd you? Enjoy that, yeah.
I'd love that.
Almost, actually, I guess maybe even more so now.
I'd be fucking annoyed if I had to audition for you, to be fair.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, there's the other side of this when you're new filmmakers and younger filmmakers and you're meeting actors and making friends that sometimes you're writing stuff for parts. I don't think I'd there wouldn't be a situation where I'd audition you.
Thanks, mate. Dodge that bullet.
Just never would.
Can't even fucking act.
No, you know what I mean. That with that, we've worked together enough that we'll get on enough that I know how we'd work together. So I wouldn't have to. So that's the other side of things. Oh, we talk about the high level where people are just like, you know, doing meetings. But obviously, it works throughout the scale when you make friends and you have people you work with regularly that you know you can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. But we are going all over the place. So I guess, yeah, we should chat about a standard audition, maybe.
Yeah. So run us through how it would work.
Do you want to go, you?
Oh, well, I don't mind. From my point of view, yeah, you just schedule a little bit. You get that room. You schedule a bit of time for each actor, 15 minutes. Come in. You must have someone to read with you if you're a director. No matter what level you're at, you get a friend, somebody who's not an actor, not involved, but even if it's just you and your short film, get someone, get your mum or dad, whoever, to read the lines with the actor so you can watch.
Yeah.
Nothing worse, I guess, for an actor as well. I'm sure you've had some experience there where a director reading the lines themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not watching any sort of performance then. They're trying to read lines and act themselves. And so it's a pointless experience for everyone.
It sounds like a real basic thing, but I've been to several auditions, ones that are maybe people that are slightly inexperienced. Know where you're putting your camera, honestly. But I've had one when I was reading. It's like a long table, and that usually happens. It always looks like the Last Supper or something. And there's all these people sat there and I'm reading someone on my left hand side, and they've put the camera like over here. And yes, you probably get a nice bit of profile, but surely you're only going to see the wrong side. It sounds silly like that, but if from an actor's perspective and having some understanding, which most actors should do, understanding of where a camera goes, I would see that and instantly in my head that rings alarm bells as they don't know what they're doing.
I just straight think off the bat. We've chatted about this in some sense before, but auditions aren't one way, are they? You're also, it's people think it's directors picking actors. As I started this definition wrongly, I guess, because it's actors also looking at the production team for the first time. So especially if it's something that's sexual, I guess, or dark or something, that actors are looking at these people going, I've read the script, I like it, but it's very, you know, it's a tough project. So am I going to put my trust in these people, this director, this team, to put myself in a vulnerable position? So yeah, it's also like a two-way thing. And I say, yeah, you've definitely put your camera in the right place, because say if you're seeing a lot of people, the idea is you can go back and rewatch the footage, or if you're struggling to decide.
Okay.
And that's the first step of any audition. Be polite when they come in, get them a glass of water, get them relaxed. You don't want an actor doing a reading straight away off the bat, walking into a room, you know, not knowing who's who or what's going on. Introduce everyone, get some glass of water. How was your journey? And then what do they think of the script, the role? Any questions? Have the first 5 minutes been that before you go into your first reading?
That must be quite interesting to hear what an actor's, because that's their first take on the character, right? So that must be quite.
Well, in a way, as I say, we talked about giving people, getting feedback in your script, but in a way, they're your first audience. In a way, they might be the first person who's a complete stranger to you, who's gotten a bit of your script that you're going to make.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to hear their thoughts as how your words have translated into them. Mind. Yeah. Having said that, I don't tend to give much feedback at that point. I'm just interested in hearing stuff because I want their first reading to completely their own.
Is it quite a passive experience for the director?
Yeah, I would let them talk and discuss their thoughts to me, and then just say, okay, well, that's great to hear. So let's go for our first read through though, and then I say I wouldn't give them any
direction.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to see what they bring to the character, because it's also, and I think good direction, a part of that is being open to new ideas and new readings of your script, and someone might blow you away with something you thought of. So I let the first one be completely their own, and then even if they nail it, you go for a second version where you give direction, something the other end of the scale maybe, so to see how, say, on a bigger project when you're doing multiple scenes and the character's developing over the course of the scene, you want to make sure that your actor can take direction and you can work with them. Even if it's nailed, you give them some sort of direction and change their performance to see how they adapt to it. The other side, I guess, is if they read it in your mind completely wrong the first time around, you give them direction closer to what you're looking for and see how they adapt to that. And so maybe it's, and it can go as three or four read-throughs if you feel there's something in this actor or something that's catching your attention, but they're not quite getting it. I'd give them a few opportunities to get that.
You're looking for someone that fits the role, but also someone who has the versatility and someone that you can work with.
And then after that, once you've had a few read-throughs and you've seen what you need to see, you run through like dates, filming dates, to make sure they're free, availability, any like weird things with the script, nudity, like fight scenes, does it have fencing? All the things that you need to know. Can you fence?
Do you own your own katana?
Are you really a black belt? All these things that you have to check. But yeah, anything unusual with the script. So the idea being that, if there is nudity or violence or a specific skill that you're not casting them, then dropping that on them and putting them in an awkward position.
Yeah.
From an actor's point of view, if you said you can fence but you can't fence, that is the point you go buy fencing lessons.
Yeah.
Straight
away.
Yeah. But so then you do all your thank yous and goodbyes and, the next person in.
But so sorry.
No, I was going to say, it's tough. And so normally you video them, the audition, so you can go back and rewatch and take your time to think about it. But I guess there is a certain bit to it that's like any job audition, which is, if you're seeing 10, 15 people, it's somehow to stand out, I guess. Yeah. That idea of be first in or last in is always good. I prefer actors who make bold choices and go for it.
Nice.
Actually, one other interesting anecdote I heard this week about casting with, I can't remember. This is one of my shit anecdotes. We need a shit anecdote jingle.
Shit anecdote. Oh, here it comes. That's not very good.
Once again, blowing me away with your improv anecdotes. But I can't remember what it was, but it was, I think it was Catherine Bigelow, this story, maybe. But basically, she was having new actresses for this particular role. And a very hard thing to do is acting, not doing much.
Yeah.
Where obviously, like, in a way, like, we associate good acting wrongly with like crying and big performances and things like that. But actually, a really tough thing to do is do not a lot. And so the first thing she did for this audition for all these younger, newer actresses is she hid something in the room and she was like, I want you to find that.
Great.
They had to go find an object in the room that she'd hidden. And she wanted to see how natural they were on camera, because it's a really awkward thing to be realised you're filmed looking for something. And some of them all apparently tensed up and were like awkward on camera. And she was looking for someone who was very naturally comfortable.
That's
just walking around trying to find something and not being bothered about the camera. So you can play little great. Tricky games.
That's great.
Stuff like,
there's a famous practitioner of part of method called Sanford Meisner, and his whole ethos is investing time in the reality of doing. And the very first thing you learn in that is that there's this. Well, at least I remember this when I was studying it, is that they go right, and I kind of do it with my students a little bit. You go right, I want you to count all the chairs in the room. So everyone sits there and goes and just nods. Everyone looks like the Churchill dog nodding. Maybe the odd finger comes up. And I say, if you stuck a CCTV camera, that's what you'd look like. You're just nodding. You're having silent conversations. But the actual, and it's what is classed, if you were to put in its clear definition, is bad acting, because it doesn't look like what you're doing. You're not doing it. You're just acting, counting. But if you were to go, right, count the chairs, if you were to get up and physically tap the chairs, that is the action of doing. And what Catherine Bigelow obviously was doing, wanted to see someone live truthfully in that given set of circumstances, which was find the object in the room. Yeah. But some actors don't think that way, and they will go, God, what am I going to do? Well, how have I got to do this? Because Catherine Bigelow sat opposite me and she made Point Break.
Is there a chance that she just lost her keys?
Totally. Oh, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt,
notorious for it.
Catherine, whistle for my keys, Bigelow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she needs to get that.
Catherine lost my key at Lowe's.
Oh!
Awful.
Catherine lost my keys big time at Lowe's.
Big time. Anyway, my note from this is that Ryan and I talk far too much.
We have been
Mr. Ashley Key, because I reckon.
Well,
I'm knowing you to be the smooth talking gentleman that you are, I can imagine you're a very good interviewee.
I reckon you are.
I reckon you've killed it in job interviews, because basically it's a job interview, and just take a step back from it. So, do you have any top tips for us from the other side of, I guess, the camera and the filmmaking process, from an outsider looking in, listening to all the shit we've just talked about? How would you blow us away in an audition? Apart from your sultry tone. My God, I can't say anything.
Ever. Anymore.
That's a good question, Tiernan. So I can't really chip in terms of auditions. I've not really done an audition, but I've certainly done a fair few job interviews. pour myself some wine whilst I reminisce over job interviews. And one of my very least favourite job... I actually quite enjoy job interviews. I quite enjoy talking to people. I think I'm a bit weird in that way. People think that I'm weird, but I get quite excited about them because I don't get to talk to many people in real life. So, but my least favourite ever job interview involved... it was like, I think it was about 30-minute talking to a panel. I think there were four or five people behind the big long table.
Yeah.
But then they invited other candidates in, and we had to do group work.
Oh God!
Oh,
is that a scenario that ever
where
happens?
You're dragged down by the lowest common denominator?
Yeah. You don't. I know what you're getting at. So yeah, you get workshop auditions, if that's what you mean.
Well, right. I just wondered if you're always auditioning just for one particular role, or if you're auditioning for a couple of roles, would you ever bring in a couple of people who are auditioning for those roles?
And I mean,
play them off against one another. Well, that sounds a bit harsh, but you know what I mean.
I can only think of maybe two where I've done plenty of auditions where there's been two of us in the room, and they've wanted to see how two people work with each other, and they may have already cast
chemistry
someone.
Chemistry test,
yeah. But then there's also ones where it could be where there's three people and they've not decided on the role. I mean, I did a job where there was a couple of us in the room. In fact, I went in singly on our own, and then I assumed, my agent said, yeah, you got the job, went to go and do this particular job, and it was only like 2 days' work. And on the first day, I came in and goes, oh, I'm playing the role of so-and-so. And someone said, so am I. And the next person said, so am I. And what they'd done
that's
was...
devastating.
Yeah, they had three of us who basically spent all day doing the same bit, I mean, it wasn't a film, it was a commercial, but it was like they didn't make their mind up on the day and they had three of us doing the same thing.
They were going to sign the edit?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was not
good noise there.
Let's add that to the soundboard.
Oh.
That's stupid.
Yeah, that was a bad choice.
It's not even a choice.
It's bad. It
fucking
was,
hell, if you can't even like be good enough to pick an actor.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, make the fucking choice. Jesus Christ. But that annoys me.
I guess
me, that
people
does.
Are just scared of scared but that was of a casting big budget. Incorrectly, though.
But just to think as well, the amount of time on set that's wasted, like you could get more shots, better performance out of one actor instead of hedging your bets with three.
Yeah.
Such a waste of time and resources and everything.
It wasn't a small budget thing. It was a fairly a fairly big budget.
I was
going to
say,
Christmas
it must be, yeah, because
like,
you'd never normally have the chance. I hope I'm not digging up old wounds here. Did you make the edit?
Well, no, the whole advert got pulled.
Oh no.
God,
it got pulled because it was
because they had too much footage.
It's so much footage. It was like, this has got to be less than 30 seconds.
It's an editing nightmare.
Job tips for us, Ash? Or would you happily come in on our next auditions now, having heard that?
I'd be quite excited.
I reckon you'd be the man for the read through.
I mean, you would really enjoy totes. It.
Count me in.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to cast this at some stage, so the three of us will be in a room with A-list Hollywood actors, no doubt.
Yeah. Laughing at them.
Everyone wanting this hot script.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, so maybe we should discuss a bit more about casting our own film, and maybe like, yeah.
In fact, before we dive into that, do you guys have any particular examples of characters that you thought were either cast perfectly or miscast? Certainly one that I can think of from recently, but I'm not sure whether or not it was miscast on the basis that I haven't got around to watching it, but I assume it was Vince Vaughn in the second series of True Detective.
Ah, yes.
How did that go down?
I don't know. He's a funny one, isn't he? Because he has he's a bit of a walk-in. He has his way of delivering stuff, and you know it's him. I think he does quite a lot.
And that was uncanny.
See that bit.
When he plays the dog.
Yeah. But you know, he's very, very good at playing darker roles. So I wasn't a big fan of the second series of True Detective. There are some things which are like, how has that been cast? But then you watch it, like, that's amazing. There's Tilda Swinton in Snowpiercer.
What a ridiculous film.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, that's my recommendation for the week, Snowpiercer.
Wow. Okay.
But I thought she was I thought I wouldn't have seen that coming at all.
Like, she is brilliant in it. Yeah,
this proper Yorkshire lady.
It's still a ridiculous film.
It's not a ridiculous film. It's great.
Well, the good casting I've seen recently, and this kind of good casting slash good acting, is Cillian Murphy in Peaky Blinders.
Oh,
have
you watched Peaky Blinders?
I think we mentioned that before. Everyone in The Leftovers, just to get my casting of the week. Everyone in The Leftovers. He just completely owns that role. I knew he was a good actor from, you know, all the Christopher Nolan films and other stuff I've seen him in. But my God, someone who just completely terrifying and focused and everything else that Tommy Shelby is Cillian Murphy. Paul Anson as his brother is amazing as well. I think that's one of the best cast shows I've ever seen. Ellen McCrory, as we said. Everyone in it is just so, so good. Sam Neill's Northern Irish accent occasionally slightly...
But who cares? He's in Event Horizon.
He's great. But I'm trying to think of really bad castings.
I guess it's good that we can't think of any. One, what about Peter Capaldi as Malcolm Tucker being just phenomenal?
Yeah.
And then Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who.
And I think that's kind of a...
I guess that's really tough. I was going to say ongoing TV series with like recurring characters or changing characters, and it's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean that goes down the same as anything where a character you recognise. It's a lot easier for as an audience to make that judgment. I mean, the Batman films, for example, if or Bond film, there's a reason why you say who's your favourite Bond, right? You don't have that thing of going, you don't go, oh, they're all
Timothy
good.
Dalton.
What?
What?
Really?
No,
gonna leave. No, Timothy Dalton was cool. I quite like Living Daylights.
Sean Every Day.
See, but this Sean. Is this is the films
little unknown Bond. Yeah. Sean Every Day.
Oh, Sean Every Day.
Sean Connery as a Russian submarine captain.
Yes.
Surely that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
Sean Connery is an Irishman detective in Chicago.
Untouchables. I was gonna say the other one that jumped out for me when we were chatting about recurring characters. Yeah, is the Joker now. I mean, Jared Leto, I don't think has had the best reception to his attempts at it. But then I kind of respect his bravery going after Heath Ledger. Someone had to take it up eventually. But that was, I mean, he just blew it away, Heath Ledger, didn't he?
So, again, it's the same thing, though.
That's great casting.
He's amazing. Someone and actually, he was...
10 Things I Hate About You is what I always associate with my head. And to imagine that guy as the Joker...
But he was the only person Nolan had in mind. He didn't audition it.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's plenty for other roles, and I think that's difficult if it's one that we all know and we all have some kind of connection and history with. Because to me, like Mark Hamill is the Joker in my eyes, because his voice is what it is.
Actually, the other great one for me is James Gandolfini, Tony Soprano. Obviously, I know we talked about Sopranos before, but I mean, so perfect for the role. Like, and actually, I'll give my recommendation of the week. There's an amazing book called Difficult Men, which is about showrunners, the concept, especially in America, of the person who runs TV shows, head writer, creator of TV shows. So the famous ones, David Chase, Vince Gilligan with Breaking Bad,
Benioff.
David Simon for The Wire, Benioff and Weiss for Game of Thrones, if I'm saying that correctly, they're pronouncing their names. But so the idea of showrunners, the people in charge of our big favourite TV shows. And so it's about their lives, and it follows these guys. And in the book, they talk about Tony Soprano and James Gandolfini being cast. And supposedly, and obviously inhabiting that character for such a long time, and the blurred lines of where kind of James Gandolfini stopped and Tony Soprano begins. And I think towards the end, a few series in, he started to really struggle with it, and it was doing all this dark material and going to these dark places that he started to take off and miss days of shooting, and it was just too much for him, and he would be uncontactable. And then because James Gandolfini is such a nice guy, he would and he got on well with the crew and everyone, he'd break down, come back to set, be crazy regretful and apologetic about missing these days. And he started doing things like he'd hire sushi chefs, like the top sushi chefs from wherever they were filming, to come in and do sushi nights for the crew. Or one day he arrived back after he'd been missing again, he brought everyone a personal masseuse. So there was masseuses on set for all the things, because he was obviously the whole show was relying on him at that point, but he was feeling such pressure and had gone so deep with this character that he was struggling to deal with it in the long. But it was a great bit of casting. I mean, no one—you can never imagine anyone else as Tony Soprano. Yeah. Having seen him even for just 2 minutes of it, he's so perfect for it. Bad casting. Tom Cruise replacing Brendan Fraser in The Mummy.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, well, he didn't really replace him.
Well, it's just rebooting, isn't it? Yeah,
right, not anymore.
Yeah, true.
There's obviously the obvious one. I know we've not really spoken at all about what's going on at the moment with film and these terrible men that have now been outed and stuff. But the big one is Christopher Plummer is replacing all the scenes that Kevin Spacey's doing in that new film about the hostage. I think what it's called about the which is incredible for Plummer to. I mean, he's of an age as well, so he's. You know, he's coming in to do that, but it must be hard, I guess, on the casting things if you're being replaced with something. You're coming in. There's plenty of ones when casting has gone wrong early on. You know, Eric Stoltz in Back to the Future was replaced by Michael J. Fox, and I think there's early ones of like, you know, screen tests of different people just not getting it because they weren't.
Yeah.
Like Sean Connery was meant to be Gandalf, you know.
Oh, well, and I guess the other, actually, like if we're talking about problems in the industry, I guess the other thing with casting these days is, you know, the whitewashing that goes on with certain films and certain international stories being taken and twisted to fit white actors, and so that's always a shame. And thankfully, I think it's something that the industry's hopefully starting to wake up with. And I can't remember the name of the actor's name, unfortunately, but a very high profile. Recently with an actor had been cast in a role that was originally for an Asian character, and he went for the audition and got cast, I believe, and he was very honest about saying he hadn't realised that the role required that. And so once he'd found that out and kind of there was a bit of backlash, I guess he very honourably stepped back and said, this is wrong and I shouldn't be casting this, and removed himself from the role and said, this should be for an Asian actor, which was a great thing to do. So it's the first hopeful stand that things are starting to change, and that, because I mean, I know there was criticism of Matt Damon, not personally for him necessarily. I'd say that's the other thing. I guess people are casting things, they just do them. But Matt Damon in the film The Wall, I think that was one of the lesser ones. I remember Emma Stone in that, Tilda Swinton in Doctor Strange. I think that was originally an Asian character. And there's as I'm not blaming these actors personally, but I guess that's potentially an example of bad casting now.
Mm.
So I think I got through that all right without offending anyone. Well done.
It's rare, but well done.
Let's move on.
But now let's get into the meat of the podcast.
Applying all of this to our own film.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure everyone eagerly awaits each fortnight with our podcast.
Yeah.
But no, we thought this week would be a bit of fun, and we'd dreamcast our film, like our main houses.
Did anyone ever have a dreamcast?
No, back in the day, I often thought of it. I was an N64 kind of guy.
Speaking of the N64, I did win my GoldenEye challenge, just for those of you with the cliffhanger.
Oh, so. Yes.
Well done. I
was Boris.
Okay.
Ooh, excellent.
I was invincible.
He's like the second shortest one, isn't he?
No, he's all right. He's a little bit orange in places. He's pretty visible.
Is he? Oh, yes. He has his Hawaiian shirt thing on, doesn't he, or whatever.
So Hawaiian.
Da-da, da-da.
So, on to our cast.
Yeah.
Let's. I will read out the characters that we have, and we can all throw out some ideas of whom we would dream to play.
Yeah, any actor in the world. And once again, we haven't shared these amongst ourselves. This is live on air, throwing out ideas. But yeah, just a few ideas for each character. And
Do they have to be alive?
Yes.
They have to be alive.
I did debate that myself, but I think that's... Yeah, let's if we're gonna fake cast our film, let's fake cast it seriously.
Okay, yeah, we don't want this to be ridiculous.
No, and as an extra thing, if there is any reach out there that one of our listeners or many of our listeners are actually any of these actors on our list,
if you have connections, hook please, a brother up.
Yeah, please get them in touch or get in touch with us at there's a film in that
or there's a film in that at gmail.com.
Ooh. Or there's a film in that on Instagram.
Yes.
So yeah, let us know your thoughts on what we're about to throw out there, and if you agree, or any suggestions we might have missed out on, anyone that you think would really fit a role, or who you saw from what we've described of our characters in our story so far, who did you see fitting in it?
Yeah. Who do we want? It's Mikhail. Let's start with Mikhail, the big M.
Okay, I've got a serious one for Mikhail, and it's Peter Stormare. Do you know who Peter Stormare is?
Recognise the name.
He's in Armageddon as the Russian cosmonaut.
Ah,
and
yes.
He's in. He does a lot of like voiceover for the Call of Duty games, and he's actually in John Wick 2 at the very beginning.
Oh yeah, he is.
And he's very funny, and he's very he's in Fargo. He's totally in Fargo. He's Steve Buscemi's guy. He's the guy who puts him through the
wood chipper.
But he's absolutely, and he's in Big Lebowski, obviously. So he's my go to for Mikhail.
Nice.
So, I thought I struggle with this role, but let's throw Jean Claude Van Damme out there.
As you do.
Let's get out of the way.
That's
early.
Mikhail.
Why not?
Talk me through how you got there.
I mean, like, let's just have some fun with it, you know?
Is there a chance that you just...
You picked the
first name that came to
chest? There is that risk, yes. But I thought he would... That would be a new challenge for him. I mean, we spoke earlier about Vince Vaughn not quite ever reaching his potential. In terms of dramatic roles, has Jean-Claude Van Damme ever been tested to
that.
What Mikhail would have to bring to the table?
He did that comedy one when he's got the series, that TV series out that's coming out, Jean-Claude Van Johnson or whatever it's called. But he also did JCVD, didn't he, which was like that one where he's stuck in, he's like he's failing actor, he's being him, and he's not a failing actor, but he's playing this, he's having a bad run of it, and he gets caught in the middle of a like a siege or a hostage situation, something like that. But yeah, that's I could see him doing that.
To go deeper into it, like I'm also thinking the mullet from the Coors Light ad. Let's just keep that in there. Okay. But so we're thinking Russian weatherman. I'm thinking handsome.
Yeah.
I'm thinking tough.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking he's gone through this kind of life changing, the highs and lows of this. He's experienced this internet shame.
Highs and lows,
a little weather pun there.
Oh,
but no, he's gone through the ringer with moving to England.
Yeah,
And having to hide. So I'm thinking he's also
Jean-Claude.
Beefed up, maybe as a bit of result of, like, you know, he's been in the gym. He's been intimidated by people. He's saying, I won't be intimidated anymore. He's gone full on into the gym.
Does he get intimidated by the dirty pigeons?
They love a bit of him.
No, so yeah, he's gone full on, like, he's gone fully in. And I'm thinking, you know, no disrespect to Mr. Van Damme saying this, you know, I think some of the highs and lows of his career, he could really draw on that and bring out something we haven't seen before, you know?
Okay.
Yeah,
but it's bold, but you know, like I said, you know, I want actors to make bold choices in the audition. I want to throw out bold castings.
I like it, yeah.
And I think I think I'd love to, you know, challenge him to go to new levels with his acting.
Why don't you go and marry him?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that'd be fun. Jesus Christ. There you go.
Well, we've already talked about the only person that can pull off a, you know, convincing Russian accent. Being Sean Connery. And if we're going to give people a second chance at auditioning for
wow,
things.
Wow, yeah.
You know, he's got to have another shot.
I thought you were going to say pull off a weatherman.
First shot at that. Yeah. Second shot at Russian accent. Oh, wow, yeah, I like that. What age is Sean now? He was quite... How long ago did Mikhail...
He's the Highlander.
Well, he gets killed. Was he an 80-year-old weatherman?
Do you know what?
I mean,
actually,
if you know about the weather, you've got to be.
No, so no.
True.
Christopher Lambert could do quite a decent weatherman, I reckon. You know, he played Raiden in Mortal Kombat.
Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson.
Now we're talking.
Got the looks.
But is that a bit of a typecast though? People are going to assume he's going to like find people and shit and that are taken, or you know,
he's
going to fight
in
wolves.
Trouble, isn't he? He's
always
been chased.
Almost,
he hasn't fought
like,
the weather yet.
I feel
yet.
Like it's almost the opposite. He's the one in hiding now. He's the one who's been forced into isolation. I know not quite the same as his daughter, but it's taken. But it's that idea that he's the one in trouble now.
Especially
maybe
if
it's,
you
meet
Flick from his Neighbours.
But I was surprised. I thought for a minute that you were going to throw out Michael Fish himself and we were going to go full on truth blurs.
How old is he?
Oh, that's a much better idea. Let's say that.
I was about to say I don't know about his Russian accent, but then you did throw out Sean Connery. So yeah, it kind of answers itself there. Yeah.
All right, who's next?
Okay, right. Joanne Niebolt, the first of the Niebolts.
Okay, I've got a couple for that, but yeah. You go first, man.
Okay, so yeah, I'll lead the way with this one. I mean, I think she's just awesome in everything she does. One of Britain's finest actresses, Olivia Colman.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, nice.
So I thought she could do everything that was required of that role. And I mean, I think Joanne Niebuhr, she's got lots of different facets to her life. She's, potentially a radio host, an author, a mum. You need someone who's going to span all those aspects of the role. And also bring that performance for the chaos that rains down upon the cul-de-sac, worrying about her daughter, the residents, the garden, someone who can really, plunge those emotional depths. And I think Olivia Colman's the woman to do it.
I've gone with Maxine Peake. Ooh. I think on a similar feel to Olivia Colman, and I love Olivia Colman, so that was a nice touch, but I think there's a much more of a... I think Maxine Peake has a very... quite a commanding, not just a stern look about it, but something which would, she's quite straightforward. And I think she'd, I think that would something that would come into the role. She does, she's a predominantly more theatre, I think you'd recognise her stuff. And she recently played Hamlet and that was, that's to me, she seems like much more of that kind of, I've had a bit of a rough one, now I'm back and I'm coming at it. And,
Nice. Yeah. Ash?
I'm not sure if this is just led by the fact that I've been watching Wanted on Netflix, which is probably my recommendation for this week. But there is an Australian actress on there called Rebecca Gibney.
I know who you are.
I thought would be an excellent Joanne. And then I thought, well, if she couldn't hide the Australian accent, maybe Joanne's just come back from Australia.
True, I was going to say, well, I know with some of my later suggestions, I'm mixing things up a little. So, yeah, she could certainly...
Yeah, I know.
I'd be happy to... again, in the real world, you could potentially... If you got an actor, if you're especially lower budget filmmaking, if you got an actor who was just really into your project and it would bring great exposure and a great performance, I'd certainly be open to a writer director tweaking the script for them. So it's still kind of a liquid process at that point that I'd be, but if I got someone I really wanted, I'd change the backstory to work.
So there you go, Rebecca, just saying, we might change,
give us a shout. We were maybe too harsh on ourselves saying if you know any of these actors, give us a shout. If any of these actors are listening directly, feel free to Olivia, Rebecca, anyone listening in,
Maxine,
Jean-Claude,
Peter Stormwell,
feel free to reach out to us. We'll do the contact details again at the end. But very, very nice. I'd be happy with any of those actresses.
Cool.
They'd all be great for the role and bring the performance we're looking for. So will we go on to
young Kirsty?
Yeah, young Kirsty.
So here's the thing. Just going to chuck out there. It's not necessary to have them look similar, but if they do, then that's always a bit of a bonus, isn't it? I've got someone I think would do it, but I can't remember her name.
I've gone for Matt Berry.
Perfect. Perfect.
I think he looks similar in some ways. I think he could personify the role as the YouTube star. And I think he'd make a good young Kirsty Niebuhr.
Yeah.
Nice. That's brave casting. That I would classify as against type. Casting against type. Matt Berry as Kirsty Niebuhr. I had one. She's maybe a little old for the role now, unfortunately. But again, with working with younger actors, that often, I think it's 16 is the age that, working hours change. But obviously, it's a common occurrence in the industry to cast older for someone to play younger so you can have them for full working hours and effectively, you don't have to worry about guardians on set and everything else like that. You can, as a certain under 16, I believe, it's restricted hours, etc. So often people 18 upwards are cast in the role. They look younger, but you have the full flexibility of their hours and working as an adult. So she would be too old for this role, I feel, of Kirsty, but after my Peaky Blinders marathon the past few weeks, Amy Fionn Edwards, who plays Esme Shelby in Peaky Blinders, would be a very... She's got a great look for the role. I think I can imagine her fitting well with Olivia Colman or any of the actresses we discussed. I'd say, so maybe as someone, a younger slightly younger version of Amy, who's a fantastic actress. And it's in Luther as well, for those of you, I think, I believe season 3 of Luther, for anyone who hasn't seen Peaky Blinders.
I've gone with another Olivia, Olivia Cook, from Mio and the Dying Girl. And she's in new Ready Player One that's coming out in December. Because I think she's, again, she's probably in her early 20s now, I think. But it's not a case of looking younger or anything like that, but she's watching her and Mio is, if you've ever seen it, it's a great film, and she's got quite a sharp wit also. I think there's a sense of, there's like a I think Kirsten Ebert's still got that kind of sense of, like, there's a need to be recognized. Obviously that's part of what she's doing, need to be, everyone knows who she is, and that's something which is maybe playing against what she's done in Mio and even in Ready Player One. The character playing Ready Player One is very confident and stuff, but there's a reason, there's something which counters that, if you've ever read the book, and which is kind of a running theme throughout that particular book. But I think she would suit quite nicely.
Nice choice, yeah. I did have one other actress then, because I was thinking, obviously, we had this whole backstory potentially with they'd been in America and everything else. So I was thinking young Kirsty could have grown up in America. Sad to lose the Scottish accent. And I must reference Dan again, who we did say was potentially cast in the role, my Scottish friend.
That's right.
He would potentially be up against Abigail Breslin.
Famous
for Little Miss Sunshine, but also done Zombieland and a few other
Was she in The Ring?
I'm not sure she was in The Ring.
Wasn't she the... what's her name? Samantha? Well, maybe she wasn't. Maybe it's the other one.
No, it's the one from
Donnie Darko, isn't it? Is it? I can't remember.
But I thought she's 21 currently, but as a younger look, so I thought she could play a teenager still, and a fantastic actress. With that whole American backstory that we potentially had, the accent, everything could fit there. She grew up in the States for a while, she'd have an American twang, and I thought that could potentially work.
That's a good shout. I like that.
Cool.
Did you have any ideas for the Leds, Gerald and Valerie?
Well, yeah, I had a few for these. I mean, it's tough to look beyond some of the classic older British actors. So I've gone with Ian McKellen and Judi Dench. I imagine that the Leds bring a lot of gravitas to the cold attack, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Gerald's whole naval background, Valerie, the... you know, has stuck with him over the years, a tough woman in her own right, a naval husband away for a time, but she's always, you know, so I wanted two actors who would just bring that same gravitas that the Leds have to the cul-de-sac, to our set. And I thought Judy and Ian would be the pair to do that. I debated Maggie Smith and Michael Caine as well.
This is very upsetting. I had Ian McKellen and Maggie Smith.
Oh, nice. Ian coming up strong. Certainly we think we see him there. Yeah. Ryan, were you along similar lines?
I had younger, so I'm gonna say the two for Gerald Led. Gerald Led?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first one, I'll go with the older one. I'll go with the young one first. Younger one is Peter Mullen. He's in Tyrannosaur and Scottish actor. He did play Mother Superior in Trainspotting.
Okay.
And he was one because he could probably play older anyway, and he's quite a, you know, gruff. He's Scotsman anyway. He's got that whole thing anyway, especially in you watch Tyrannosaur, obviously he's quite an, or even is it My Name Is Joe, didn't he, years ago. The other one though, if I wanted to go a bit more kind of more not caricature, but maybe find more Peter Mullen could do comedy just as well anyway, but someone who has a lot more kind of comedy. Like experience and history in the repertoire is Jim Broadbent.
Nice. Shout.
I recently rewatched, now I'm not a big fan of Only Fools and Horses, but I recently rewatched ones with him in it, and it just totally steals it. It's so funny.
Awesome.
What about Bill Bailey?
Bill Bailey. Holy shit, yeah. That would be great, wouldn't it?
I can't quite see him with the naval background.
You could have a little hat. And that would get past it.
I had one other as well, which was Mark Rylance. Just because I think he'd be amazing to work with. I think he's absolutely killing at the moment. Bridge of Spies was his most recent film I watched. Just amazing.
He's most famous for doing Jerusalem. I was on with it was a ferryman guy who wrote that. I can't think of his name. And that's like his thing. I've gutted and never got to see that, but that's like anyone, yeah, anyone who's seen it would totally agree. Yeah, it's most amazing.
Dunkirk, obviously, as well. I'm saying British Spies, but Dunkirk, done loads of famous films over the years, but fantastic actor. Yeah. The other one then was Rihanna for Valerie. No, not really. Talking about bad castings. But yeah, I could imagine any of those. Quite pleased with that.
Who are we on to now? Regina Jones.
Regina, yeah.
Regina Jones.
Ash, did you have one for this? You can go first this round.
I actually didn't.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, I didn't say my one for Valerie Led, did I?
Apologies.
Imelda Staunton was my Valerie. She does a lot of Mike Leigh stuff. She did Vera Drake and she's in Harry Potter ones. I think she has that kind of, you know, suffragette-esque kind of feel to her as well. So yeah, I think that would work quite nicely.
Good shout.
Very nice. Cool.
On to Regina.
Ryan, you can go first.
I do, but I was just looking at someone else I was looking at, but I do, but I quite like the idea of Jennifer Jason Leigh. If she could pull off a British act, well, she probably could anyway, but the whole Daisy Domergue thing and single white female and that, like, she's definitely got the crazy. Or the lady who does Twin Peaks. What's her name? Does the dance.
Aubrey.
Yeah, the lady's name plays Aubrey in that, but yeah.
As the hate preacher.
Yeah.
A tricky one, that one. I struggled a bit with that. I suppose.
I didn't struggle at all with this one.
Okay.
I had two. I had a couple of age ranges that I was thinking. My slightly older actress was Emily Watson.
Yeah, but she did that in Thingy, didn't she? The Harry Potter spin-off.
Okay.
It wasn't. I'm thinking of Samantha Morton. Is it Samantha Morton was in that?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. I've seen it. But you're thinking of Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, because it's kind of like a hate preacher-esque character in that.
No, I had Emily Watson, who I've been a massive fan of since Punch Drunk Love, the P.T. Anderson film with Adam Sandler. She's awesome in that and awesome in everything. And again, I thought she'd be. And then I also had Carrie Mulligan, would also again.
Oh, that would be really cool.
Bring the versatility. I think if I had one actress I could work with in my career, it's always been Carrie Mulligan. She's always fantastic in everything. I think Drive is a film I love, and she's awesome in that. And just, so I thought she could potentially be an interesting hate preacher again, because I guess that role's a bit of a chameleon, you know, that we were the idea that no one in the cul-de-sac knew about this whole backstory. So I guess that's maybe, you know, that's a really interesting one to type someone who could bring that level of acting to go between completely performing in her own role to the rest of the cul-de-sac. She's putting on this face, but also has this twist and this power and passion that you could see being a prominent hate speaker and having people follow her and having that kind of presence and gravitas to inspire hatred amongst and following amongst people of that ilk. Yeah? So I thought Carrie could be the woman for that. Nice. Yeah, so Carrie, there you go. Reach out whenever you're listening.
Who's next?
I was just thinking, actually, of is it Joanna Scanlon from The Thick of It?
She'd be great. Yeah.
Nice touch.
Good shout.
Yeah.
Okay, so into the council worker.
Well, I've got two options on mine. I've got Naomi Harris.
Nice.
From 28 Days Later with your man. Killian, amongst other things, Moonlight and the Bond films. I think she has this sense of, like, desperately trying to keep things in control. I think she probably can if she has to, but I think there's an internal thing of it's all going to shit. And I think on the other side, if we're going male, I think Rory Kinnear is I think he's absolutely brilliant.
Great.
And he's played lots of different characters, but again, he has this sense of just wanting to try and do right, but maybe there's a selfish tone I can see that he'd be able to do. I think harking back to the Black Mirror, the first one, is it Something of the Nation, wasn't it? No, that's the, that was my most recent one. Anyway, yeah, one when he had sex with a pig. That was, yeah, that was an awesome one.
Nice. Ash?
I was struggling to choose between Julian Barrett and Dylan Moran.
Dylan Moran, I didn't.
Because this is one of the characters we left very open. We hadn't really decided much. It was just a council worker. So, yeah, I never thought of them in that way.
Someone that, yeah, I just imagined them breaking down, being quite good actors for...
Nice. I love Dylan Moran. Great stand-up comedian for anyone who doesn't know. Black Books, but also does stand-up.
Shaun of the Dead?
Shaun of the Dead, Calvary, a variety of other films, and... yeah, awesome. Because I read the character completely differently, which was Lupita Nyong'o.
Nice.
So man, always a fantastic actress. And as someone I warm to very quickly on screen, always seems very kind. And yeah, just something about her, I instantly warm to. And I quite like that about the council worker, if they were going to be... Because I think it was very easy for them to be the enemy within with the hosepipe band, definitely things like that. But... I imagine actually everyone would warm to her and she'd be a welcome part of the cul-de-sac having the council worker there. And I thought she would fit the role nicely. But actually, weirdly, in a way, they're completely different in many ways, Dylan Moran and Lupita Nyong'o. But in terms of, like, I instantly warmed to both of them on screen. So it's that same kind of effect, weirdly, that I instantly...
That warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, that instantly there's something about them. I like these characters and I want to go on a journey with them. So actually, maybe not... Not so, maybe along similar lines, weirdly. But interesting. Ooh. Really open character, that one. So who do we have next?
So next is God Catman.
Oh.
God Catman. No.
The man singing that tune is surely God Catman. He's been angling for that role for ages.
God Catman.
So let's get the formalities out of the way. It is Ryan Mercier.
I assume it's Ryan Mercier.
That's our first major announcement of the feature film. Guys, Ryan Mercier has been cast as God Catman. If he wasn't to be, Ryan, who would you cast in your place if you were to take a fall or some such horrible thing?
Well, obviously the person that would be me and act like me and try and make it a decent performance that I was going to do would be Brendan Gleeson.
Another bearded wonder.
Yep.
Fantastic actor.
Yeah, I think.
Wow, yeah, I could see that.
He'd make a good understudy for you, I could imagine.
I think he would. Yeah.
Speaking of Calvary, yeah, he's played some great religious figures in his time.
Yeah, it's just slightly different, this one, I think, if he was to do that, because we're not going down. It's not like he's quite, you know, he's seen a lot, weathered quite.
Weathered, yeah. Very appropriate for our film, of course.
Yeah, classic.
Yeah.
He's seen the sun, has Brendan seen a few years.
So seen it, yeah.
He's got a great face. I believe took up acting very late. He was well into his 30s when he kind of took the plunge into full time professional acting.
He's Braveheart, wasn't he?
Hmm. He's a fantastic actor. Yeah, I'd happily along with Ian and Judy to have Brendan on set would be great. Yeah. I mean, we've got some of the greats here on this cul-de-sac now. So I again had read that role quite differently. So I had Daniel Kaluuya, I hope I'm saying that right, the lead in Get Out, also in Sicario, a couple of my favourite films from the last year or two, Sicario especially.
And he's in that.
Yeah. So he plays Emily Blunt's colleague slash friend. Who travels around with her, but who's not on the missions.
Yeah.
And fantastic actor. And, just a different take on God Catman.
Good Ash? Choice. I went with Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah. He's joining Judy, Ian and Brendan on the...
Shut up, Wednesday.
What a cast.
Wow. Yeah. Another gravitas role.
I just thought he'd be great weirdo, great religious weirdo. That's where I went.
Yeah.
Father figure, but just slightly overbearing. And I imagined him playing it in a quite slightly sinister way.
Yeah.
Like, what was that? That film with Anton Yelchin? He plays the super alt-right, like skinhead leader.
I can't remember. Yeah. I know the one you mean. I can't think of the name.
Great.
Yeah.
He did that, and he's very sinister in that. See that totally. Yeah.
Nice. Very good.
Let's go on to the troll, Mr. Tompkins, the big S.
So I had someone who, like, this is my really on-the-nose casting, but I'm a big fan of his and a big fan of the show that launched him, which was Jay Buckley, or James Buckley, and his character is Jay in The Inbetweeners. One of the funniest shows of the last decade on British television, absolutely hilarious. He was a big part of that. The dancing scene from the first feature film in The Empty Nightclub is one of my funniest things ever. If I ever see The Inbetweeners movie on, I will watch it just to get that moment. Him sitting in the bar as the other three dance over towards the girls is one of the greatest things ever put to film. And it's really on the nose, but he was well. And then actually sparking from what you guys have just said is Domhnall Gleeson as well, Brendan Gleeson's son.
That's a good idea.
So it'd be nice to have them. And he might be a little old for the role now of the troll, but but I think he's a fantastic actor. So.
Do you think Jay would be as well? A little bit too old for the role. James, sorry.
Possibly, yeah. I haven't seen him so much recently, so it'd be interesting to see. But certainly his original character from The Inbetweeners, in terms of appearance and look, are great. And he'd bring a lot of great comedy to it as well. Because I guess we need people to take potentially bring some dark comedy to it and take the edge off some of the serious stuff we're talking about in our film. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, I've picked a very highly rated comedic actor for this. From the acting dynasty of the Smiths, Jaden Smith.
Oh, that's Tiernan's interesting.
Favourite.
Tiernan, what do you think about
that? Haven't you?
Not a big Jaden Smith fan.
No?
Yeah.
Why?
A general lack of acting ability is forefront for my reasons for not liking Jaden Smith for this role.
Perfect. So that's settled. Ryan, who did you have in mind?
I had Alex Lawther, who is, you probably recognise him most from... another Black Mirror episode, the Shut Up and Dance one. I think he could play Troll quite well. I think he could play that kind of, have that, you know, we will see that two sides of someone. Maybe they're still quite introvert, but they're not going to say they're a troll. So that I think he's definitely good. He's great. And he's from Petersfield.
Is that true?
Hampshire. Yeah, where we're from. Well, not near that way. But
he is great, though.
Yeah, good shout.
Cool. Nice.
So that brings us to Mr. Earl Erner, our jazz pianist.
Can do that one.
All right.
Brian Mercier playing two roles. Once again, if it wasn't to be you, though, who would you?
I think in my head I had Lenny James, who is Morgan from Walking Dead, and he's in... Snatch, and he did that one, the surgeon one. I always think him, but because just I think also it's a new film he's in as well. There's lots of new things, but he's incredibly versatile. But he's also got there's a funny side to what he's doing. I think he's also quite amiable and that. But also I think I still think we're going to see from that character particularly. I think we're going to see certain, you know, like the stitches start to come slightly apart because they can't be sunny all the time. And I think that's someone who can do that again. I think all of these people are ones that just have to show that there's a struggle going on, but also have a funny side. So yeah, Lenny James.
Nice. Good shout. What about you, T?
I focused on the musical aspect of the role, and I've gone with Erlina Erner now in Queen Latifah.
Wow.
Wow.
I thought let's go. Like full on incredible voice.
Tiernan gets
actress.
His groove back.
How Earl got his groove back, yeah. Erlina. Yeah. So I thought I'd mix it up a little for the last role. I could Queen Latifah in the middle of the garden singing her lungs out, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you, Ash?
Well, I also went down.
Drum roll. Last casting, Ashley.
I got stuck. Also down the musical path, and I thought Mos Def would be.
Nice.
Then I thought Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 would have a better voice.
Yeah,
but definitely Mos Def would be funny.
Yeah.
Nice.
Be Crimey Wines.
Interesting. Got Ice Cube or Method Man as well.
Yeah. Warren G.
Warren G. Yeah.
Just regulated shit. Nice. Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Let's just turn it into a hip hop musical.
Yeah.
The big announcement, episode 8, is now a hip hop musical.
Psych. No. Yeah. Fuck. That was a.
Wow. I would happy with any of that cast.
Yeah. I'd be one of them.
If guys, actors, you're listening in, like, they will put it out there for you.
Boss.
If your agents, if you're listening in, give us a shout. And listeners, if you agree with us, disagree with us, let us know.
Yeah, we want to know.
Yeah.
Talk to us.
Who have we missed out? Who throw us some curveballs in there, talking about type, casting against type. Like, let us know your thoughts. Yeah, but well done, guys.
Shitting!
Yeah. I think should we wrap it up then?
Wrap it up with some. Oh my God! Wrap it up with some. Here's a song. Hi, bye.
So that's let's wrap it up with our recommendations. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say soft.
I had Difficult Men, the book. I recommend that again. A serious recommendation. One that's a great read and really interesting for anyone who watches big budget television these days. It's all about being a showrunner.
Good choice. It's nice to have a book recommended.
Yeah, Ryan. Any recommendations from your castings or anything you'd like us to see?
There was loads, wasn't there? I'll come back to me. I'll think of one. There was one.
I think I recommended The Wanted on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
But, yeah, no, I won't force any other recommendations.
And Peaky Blinders. For anyone listening, season four, by the time you listen to this,
you've totally put me off watching this.
Season four of Peaky Blinders should now be off. I've just highly enjoyed my week watching it. So, yeah.
Oh, actually, I don't know if I did recommend it, but since it's things we're watching or have watched, I highly recommend Broad City.
Okay, yeah. On my watch list as well.
HBO show. It's absolutely hilarious. And it's just these two girls living in Manhattan, and they're just. It really, really reminds me of like a cross between Bottom, the old Rick Mayer and Edmondson, for some reason, I don't know why, and kind of like a Some Mothers Do Have Them mixed with Girls. That's what it reminds me of. It's so funny. So yeah, those two are hilarious.
I'll check it out. Nice one.
And yeah, then you can check out our next episodes, which will be Act 3.
The final act.
Final act. It's the final act.
Down. Oh, yeah. Bye.
I've been told that I'd been cast as the Lord our Savior for an upcoming ad. Imagine my surprise when my agent called. Baby Jesus is a sausage roll. What next? You can turn a Beth into a pint of Beck's. Richard I with a twist of lemon zest. Ooh, that sounds lemony. Not very good for me though. No. Then I audition for The Walking Dead. Primetime TV is what my agent said. Even though the latest series has been pretty lame, at least a sausage roll couldn't upstage my game. What's this? I swear this TV show is on AMC. Why's this show being shot in Dundee? I ring my agent and she laughs at me. It's not The Walking Dead, it's the baking bread. Nick Knowles is presenting. Straight into makeup, at least I can bake. If this had been my show, I'd call it Braise the Steaks. That's pretty funny. I laugh to myself. But then I see my costume and it goes to hell. Fuck this. They're dressing me up as oversized props. A joint of beef and yakult yogurt pot. And then the axe that broke the camel's back.